The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
New Year's Eve is coming up before you guys know it, and if you're planning on popping some champagne, maybe you're hoping to pop the big question on New Year's Eve as well. It's still possible to get your custom engagement ring made, but this is the last week to have it made in time. Call Hal today at Ruback Jewelry and get your ring started tomorrow for your New Year's Eve proposal. You have to start 2021 off, right? His connections in the industry and the fact that Ruback makes their own jewelry means your dollars go farther there. Set up your appointment before the holidays. Get here by going to ruback.co/appointments. That's .co, not .com, and experience the most comfortable, relaxed jewelry buying process you've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. My name's Kent Swanson. This is the AP Laboratory. It's the mailbag edition, answering all your questions. Full disclosure, we had well over 70 questions today. And a lot of questions about, like, the offseason and the future and the draft. And much to Maddie's chagrin, we tried not to answer too many of those today because there's still a lot of stuff to happen before then. Sorry, Maddie. Find him on Twitter at Chief in Carolina. I'm sorry, pal. There wasn't a ton of draft questions that I put in the rundown today. That's my fault. I'm sorry.
Hey, you. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Thank you for joining us today, guys. We really appreciate it. We've had some really nice stuff sent our way through social media. We appreciate all of you guys, all 70 questions. If you guys really care about us, send only draft questions next week. It would really make my Christmas and my holidays, and Kent would love it. I think Craig might enjoy it too, because it's been a few weeks since he's had a fun defensive performance, so let's let him watch new defensive players, right, Craig?
I don't even need new defensive players. Like, Kent doesn't even realize this, but Maddie and I are pulling a coup, and this is now the Landon Dickerson podcast. We are just going to talk about him for the next hour straight. Your new offensive center, you guys. Go and watch him for Alabama if you catch an Alabama guy. Or an Alabama game. Pay attention to the center. Chiefs may like a guy like that, and he would really help this team.
Oh, I have takes. I have a lot of takes, too.
We have lots of takes.
I put a grade on him today for the KC Draft Guide, available in February, or available for pre-order in February. Sorry about that. We've got a lot of questions, as we always do, and you guys always bring it. Thank you guys so much. Like I said, I wish we could answer all of them. It would be a three-hour podcast, and I know you guys might appreciate that, but our wives wouldn't. So, let's just jump right into it. Five-star review question. Tyler Payne Willis asks, have you ever watched any Iowa State film, and if so, do you have any interest in one of their tight ends in the draft, especially Kohler? Thank you. Love the show.
Thank you for sending in the question with the nice review. We always enjoy that. I watched quite a bit of Iowa State film last year and over the summer, kind of preparing, trying to watch Charlie Kohler. I like him. I think that he's more of a traditional tight end than what you see go early in the draft right now, though. I think he's not super quick, not super agile, but he's got good size, comfortable catching the ball. He works the middle of the field great. I just don't know where I'm going to see that going in the draft right now. He reminds me a lot of Cole Kmet, just not quite as big, and I think that is kind of a step backwards. I do need to see him this year, see if he's kind of improved his route running, opened up a few more routes in the tree for him. But I mean, I like him. I just don't know if he's ever going to be like a top 10 tight end in the NFL. He seems more like an average starter or a really good tight end too. So I think that kind of limits him to late day two or day three for me right now. Like I said, I still got to watch this season of him.
Maddie said a high-end tight end too, and every Chiefs fan that's listening to this podcast just perked up in a big, big way all of a sudden.
Tight end two is always, like, you know, like they sometimes they say the most popular player on the team is the backup quarterback. In Kansas City, the most popular player on the team is tight end two.
Tight end two or the gadget wide receiver. Like, yeah. that is the Chiefs fans quarterback too, for sure.
Well, Tyler left a 5-star review and asked a question. If you like the show, if you like what's going on the Arrowhead Pride podcast channel, leave a 5-star review, ask a question, we try to answer it on the show. APNerdSquad@gmail.com questions, another way you can ask your questions. Send emails to APNerdSquad@gmail.com. Our guy, Mr. C. David, good to hear from you, buddy. In your opinion, is it a coincidence that the teams the Chiefs have struggled with this year are those that have defensive schemes that blitz the absolute least in the NFL, like the Raiders, Chargers, and Panthers? Full disclosure, Mr. C. David did send in a screenshot of the blitz percentage, some of the advanced statistics from teams, and low blitz percentages seem to have some success against the Chiefs, Craig.
Yes, appreciate the work put in there, buddy. We're going to get together when this is all over with and drink beers. We've talked about that, but I do think that there's something to be said for teams that have pass rushers that can win one-on-one matchups. Teams like the Chargers and the Panthers, Brian Burns, Joey Bosa, guys like that that can win these one-on-one matchups have given the Chiefs fits because they can drop 8 or drop 7 and rush with a minimal amount of guys, which forces Mahomes to hold on to the ball a little bit longer. It allows them to keep a lid on the top of the defense or on top of the offense there. And it forces Mahomes to have to evade a good rush. Now, the Raiders do neither one of those things well. I'm not exactly sure why they have been able to have so much success. Max Crosby has looked good against him. Clelin Ferrell earlier this year just absolutely dominated Eric Fisher, and that was definitely part of it. But I think teams that can rely on their pass rush to win up front without having to send the blitz, that's where Mahomes really has to try and work his hardest, and that forces his receivers to have to get open a lot more, and it results in him holding the ball longer, taking more sacks. I just think that that's really as simple as it gets. When teams have to blitz, then you have to leave somebody like Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce one-on-one, and that's just bad news for everybody.
Ben from Colorado asks, earlier this season, you talked about how Mahomes would drop back so far that the offensive tackles could not make a clean pocket for him, and this resulted in some sacks and some throwaways. 15 still drops deep, but he seems to be evading pressure better, or otherwise doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. What has changed, if anything? Well, I think a lot of it matters about like when he is doing it. So, you know, some of the drops within the structure of the protection, you know, are inconsistent. And I think he's actually done a lot better job. This, from a feet perspective, there were some really high-level moments from Mahomes this week that I was really impressed with, watching him operate within structure, within the structure of the pocket, real clean feet. And what you saw was just carving them up. I mean, he was on fire. I mean, Maddie said it. I think he said it on the podcast on the post-game show. And he's like, this was one of the best Patrick Mahomes performances we've ever seen. He's 100% right. And a lot of that has to do with how he was operating within the pocket, I thought. You know, he was really doing a good job getting to the right depths. Now, obviously, you saw some of the plays, the fadeaway, you know, to Mecole Hardman drifting all the way back. There are certain instances where, you know, you can still get away with that, and that was one of them. They didn't completely squelch that ability of his. But he used it at the right time. And so I thought, you know, honestly, it's not as much about drifting. It's about when he's drifting. And I think he's not drifting at the wrong times right now. And I think his depth's been pretty good and helped with the integrity of the pocket. And that's been a big, big thing for them. And part of why he absolutely shred them. Twitter question time. Jackson Redford asks, after listening to the post-game show and hearing you all talk about the safeties and pass rush, is it safe to say, even with the lack of major investment, that our cornerbacks are the best part of our defense currently?
No. Chris Jones is still the best part of this defense, and it's not particularly close. I do think that coupled with Derek Nnadi, Turk Wharton, that you could point to defensive tackle as being the true best part of the defense right now. I think that group is performing fairly well. I know we're talking about the pass rush. We're talking about how we want Chris Jones to get more, you know, more reps, be a more penetrative force against the pass when there's a four-man rush. But frankly, on the year, he's been pretty good. The corners have not played bad. That's not to try and slight them. Bashaud Breeland has played pretty well this season outside of the Raiders game. Charvarius Ward has played pretty well on the season outside of the other Raiders game. And L'Jarius Sneed obviously has been great. I just think that overall the top end is higher with the defensive tackles. We've seen a lot more from the defensive tackles, and we've seen a lot of the bottom end really produce. I think that rotation is just a little bit better.
That was generally going to be my take, but I think I'm going to play devil's advocate now. I'll say the cornerback group's the best part of this team for the simple fact that the defensive tackles can't stop the run. The Chiefs' run defense up the middle is terrible. And I think Derek Nnadi's great versus the run, just somehow the Chiefs cannot turn that into consistent stops. There's a couple plays every game that he's able to make versus the run. There's a flash here and there from Chris Jones and Mike Pinnell, so on and so forth. But consistently, their run defense up the middle is terrible. And when you're not getting Chris Jones playing against the Carolina Panthers' horrendous offensive line on the interior, I don't think you're getting consistent pass rush. Like, Chris Jones has been very good. He's still been the best defensive player probably this year for the Chiefs, but he's so inconsistent, and it's almost based on who they're playing right now or just how much attention the teams want to give against them. And he's just been less likely to beat double teams this year so far than he was 2 years ago when he had his monster season. I think that the team or the defensive tackles as a whole aren't playing great together. They're not dominant as a pass rush group. They're not dominant as a run defending group right now. I don't even know if they're good at either one of them right now. Conversely, yeah, you can poke holes in some of the cornerbacks' games, but you also go back and there's been a lot of games where the cornerbacks as a whole have played very well. Bashaud Breeland's had one poor game all year. L'Jarius Sneed, when he's been healthy, has not had a bad game. Rashad Fenton's had some times where he's been beat up, but overall he's been very good for a depth cornerback that plays multiple roles. Charvarius Ward's strung together a couple good games now after quite a few bad games. The cornerback group right now, especially the outside guys and the rotational guys, they're playing, I think, a more complete game than the defensive tackle group is.
Bearded Teach 87. Which offensive line is performing better this year or last year?
I'm going to go with last year because at this point in time, you're starting to get all pro level Mitchell Schwartz, and that is something this offensive line just absolutely doesn't have. I would also contend that last year's interior offensive line at the very least was even with this one, if not better. And then you're adding in the all pro on the outside. Just last year's offensive line group, while not good, they kind of started to get it together at the right time, and you still had all pro level tackle on one side, and Eric Fisher now is getting back up to health after missing some time, starting to play up to the same level that he is roughly right now, which is inconsistent but up to above average. Give me that over whatever we are currently saying.
And this team also added Stefan Wisniewski last year around this time for the stretch run. I mean, I think the Chiefs have some guys, Wisniewski, Witzman, you know, that they can consider to try and bring in to improve that. Martinez Rankin did not play this week on the interior. I think he's a guy that they could cycle in as well. I think there are some other options on the interior there that can help Mahomes, help this offensive line a little bit more. I don't know when they're going to be ready, when they're going to be willing to put those guys in, but frankly, they need it.
Yeah, hey, Stefan Wisniewski back in the mix. Maybe they're getting that late season jolt from him. You never know.
Let's go.
Tupelo Dan asks, would moving Frank Clark to the opposite side of the line help him be more effective?
Well, the thing with that, Tupelo Dan, is that Frank Clark plays about 50% of his snaps from the opposite side of the line. Frank Clark is the guy that moves around arguably as much as anybody else. Guys like Alex Okafor and Mike Dana come in and have preferred sides. They don't always line up on the same sides, but they definitely have preferred sides, and Frank Clark will move to the opposite side because of that. Same with Tano Passigno when he's in the game. So Frank Clark is a guy that they just move around plenty as it is. Now, here's the thing about Spags. He's not lining up Frank Clark against a backup all game long. Like, he's not going out of his way to try and get that matchup. They definitely approach the game from a standpoint of, when this guy cycles in, he's lining up over here. We want to get this look with this, you know, this sort of pressure package with this guy coming off of this side. He's not specifically targeting a matchup and saying, hey, Frank, we're going to put you on the worst tackle and have you go to town. They think that Frank can line up and win that matchup one-on-one no matter who's across from him. And so they just line him up wherever they need to in their pressure packages. And so he actually does play both sides about 50% of the time. The fact that he's not able to make an impact against some of these bad tackles that we've seen over the past 3 or 4 weeks, that should tell you right there. He's lining up against him. He's just not beating him.
I've always thought the Chiefs should move him a little bit more. I'm surprised it is 50% because it seems like he still lives most of the time kind of on that left side. But they do move him. Like, he's come out the last two games to start. I know at least the first rep has been on the opposite side. It's, they have no problems moving him around. I wish they would keep doing it and do it more, especially when there's a mismatch. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter which side he's on. I don't think he's been particularly more effective on one side or the other. I actually think he still looks a little bit more comfortable rushing from that left side where we usually see him. Not that he can't rush from the right, just he looks a little bit more comfortable. The moves come a little bit more naturally on that side the few times he decides to use them. Right now, I don't know what you need to do for Frank Clark to get him to pass rush, to get back to the consistent pass rush the way he did to start this year and last year. If I had the answer, I would, believe me, I would be trying to share it with everybody in hopes that he'd hear it. Is I do not know what is going on. It just looks like a guy that has no attempt to try to rush the same way that he has his entire career, which led me to what I said earlier, is I wonder if it's injury related, but he looks healthy in the way he moves. He just doesn't do what has worked for him in the past. So I don't know what's going on there. He's not winning hardly at all. Chris Jones isn't being consistent, and this pass rush is paying for it.
Staniel Sorensen asks, where do you see Lucas Niang fitting in along the offensive line next year?
I maintain that Lucas Niang should play offensive tackle. I don't know why you would try to move a guy who played tackle very well against good competition in college to inside without him having itty-bitty arms, and that's not Lucas Niang. I think he has the athleticism, the size, everything to play tackle. So I would love to see him get a chance to play right tackle if Mitchell Schwartz does not return, or left tackle if they decide to move on for Eric Fisher. If neither of those things happen, I'd still keep him at tackle to develop because he obviously wasn't in the building this year. But I do wonder, since the Chiefs did go out of their way to mention multiple times the words offensive guard, if they have plans to move him inside. And if he moves inside, I don't think he's coming back outside. So you have to be sure of that move, I think, before you do it, because it is generally a less valuable position.
I would prefer to see the Chiefs keep Lucas Niang at tackle, whether or not that means that he's playing this year or not. Or this next season or not. Now, remember, the Chiefs have an extra year of control over him because he opted out this year. So they do have 4 years remaining on his contract, I do believe. Next year is essentially his rookie year, the first year of his rookie contract. So they do still have a little bit of time if they want to let him develop. It may not be a bad thing entirely that he got this red shirt. Obviously, you wish he was in the building and developing and working from there. But from a physical perspective, he's getting to work his body. He's getting a year farther removed from injury. Those things aren't terrible. But please, just let him play tackle. Let the man play tackle. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of your questions right after this.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's the mailbag edition of the AP Laboratory, answering questions from Twitter right now. And our guy, Left Hand Ryan, asks, the evolution of Ferrari Wright has already been great since its unveil, and I think the possibilities are endless. I have thoughts for a variation of this play, but I want you each to design your version of it. And go, Craig.
Ryan, my friend, thank you for this. Okay, we're coming out in 12 personnel. We're going to do a balanced formation with Kelce and Sammy Watkins to the left. And we're going to do a running back and Nick Kizer to the right. Patrick Mahomes is going to move back to the left. He's going to receive the snap and he's going to jab step to the right, as if he's, you know, moving back out to the right, like we've seen the past two times that they've run this formation. Travis Kelce is going to loop around behind him like an end around, and Sammy Watkins is going to run a drag around to the backside. Here's where the difference is. That jab step is going to get the defense to flow with everything to the right like they have, and Eric Fisher is tackle eligible on the opposite side. Patrick Mahomes is going to set up, throw to Eric Fisher out in the flat for Eric Fisher's second touchdown of the year. And that's what I would do with Ferrari Wright. Get the defense flowing with everything. Hit them with an Eric Fisher pass when they're least expecting it.
Mine is slightly less fun. I am simply going to line up just like we did for Ferrari Wright from the get-go. Only difference is I am going to have Travis Kelce and Nick Kizer switch sides. So again, we're 12 personnel. It's balanced formation. Pat's going to do the same thing. We're going to be at midfield for this, though. Mahomes is motioning out to the right a little bit, coming back in, takes the snap, play fake to the running back who stalls out a little bit longer. He left early the first time. People don't know that. There was no play fake. He just sprinted into the line of scrimmage. I want a real play fake. Kelsey's coming behind the line of scrimmage, wheeling out the same side Mahomes rolls to. We're getting a little play action leak play off of the Ferrari right quarterback motion. We saw the Chiefs hit the leak play a few times last year to Sammy Watkins. This time we're doing it to Kelce as he works down behind the offensive line after all of this other mumbo jumbo goes on. And I'm not doing this as a red zone play. We're doing this from midfield. We're hitting a big play off of this because you know teams are going to be ready for it in the red zone. You see that at midfield. Your brain's already going to be in a scramble. You're not keeping up with Kelce coming around the backside.
All right, we're lining up in empty, condensed formation. We've got trips to the right to the field. We've got a little twins tight to the tackle into the boundary. We are going to put Mahomes on a return motion. So we are going to pretend like we're motioning into the boundary. He's going to give a hard count. We're going to see if the defense is going to try to tip and tilt. Then we're going to return back to the trip side and run a sprint rub. Maybe getting that motion, that rotation into the boundary with Mahomes, and possibly even getting a hard count. Like they might false start and get just, if it's in the red zone, it doesn't matter. Oh, by the way, this is in the red zone. But that's my look right there. I actually kind of like it. I think it'd be kind of cool. Mr. Miyagi is Andrew Wiley, in fact, legally blind, as his recent play would suggest. Wow.
Well, I don't think that he is blind. I would, however, have somebody check his equilibrium, because my guy spends a lot of time tripping and falling on the turf for a guy who is completely there. I like Andrew Wiley. I think he's got a good story. I was one of the first people that saw him in preseason. I was like, hey, I think this guy can actually play at a starter level. I just don't think there was much development from that point. He has flashes that say he can play. There's a couple of really fun reps on the move showing his athleticism. A couple reps that show how, you know, he's got a good strong core and he can control some guys. There's just so many missteps, literal and figurative, in between that I don't know if you can keep fielding him out there as a starter beyond this season. I mean, I would prefer not to be this the rest of this year, but beyond this season, because his losses come so fast, so plentiful. He reminds me a lot of LDT early in his career. There's very rare flashes, but the losses happen so fast and in such bad times that it's really hard to stick with it. The Chiefs stuck with LDT and it panned out. Maybe Andy Heck kind of has that belief in Andrew Wiley, but just the big, really bad losses as soon as the snap starts got to go when you don't have a center next to you capable of covering for you every single play.
Ranger Beach asks, why did Willie Gay only get one snap this week?
I have gotten this question several times.
That's why I'm giving you a chance to answer, Craig.
Y'all need to take that up with Bruce Arians, because Willie Gay is a base linebacker, and if Bruce Arians isn't going to play heavy personnel, Steve Spagnuolo's not going to put his base defense on the field. I see a lot of people that look at that and it's like, whoa, Willie Gay needs to be on the field. It's like, guys, if he's on the field, that means they're in their base defense. And if they're in their base defense, they don't have good coverage players on the field. If they're lining up in 11 personnel, three wide receivers, and a tight end that can go vertical, you don't want to be in your base defense. That's bad news. That means that you've got Willie Gay and Damian Wilson on a player that can both beat them. That's not great. So they go to these three safety, four safety looks against stuff like that. Willie Gay is just not to the point yet where he has cracked that nickel lineup. He has not beaten out Damian Wilson yet. We've seen it a few times when he's been on the field. He's still processing everything. It's okay. He didn't get an offseason. They did not get a real live ammunition offseason for him to learn the speed of the game, learn the playbook on the fly. They couldn't do a lot of the things that they typically would have when you would draft a linebacker in the second round. And he was a guy that needed some help with his processing coming out as well. This is just one of those where this year you're going to get what you're going to get as a base linebacker, and he's an impact guy. Look for him in 2021 and beyond to be an impact defender. He's one of their two going forward. I think Kent even tweeted about this earlier today. They're set at linebacker. Anthony Hitchens and Willie Gay are going to be your nickel linebackers going forward. That's okay, and it's going to be good. But as it stands right now, unless an offense is coming out with two tight ends or coming out with two running backs in the backfield, blocking back, heavy personnel, you are just not going to see Willie Gay barring an injury.
Curl Scouts of USA, do Steven Wisniewski and Mitchell Schwartz make a difference in this lineup? Yeah, I mean, you can't get worse than Andrew Wiley right now. He's playing so bad. Mitchell Schwartz is one of the best right tackles in football when he's healthy. This offensive line has some places that they can get some help here pretty quick. And yeah, they would absolutely make a difference. XC Andrus 11. Would you rather have Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and the Chiefs offensive line, or Devontae Adams and Green Bay's offensive line? Give me the weapons. I'm going to trust Patrick LeVon Mahomes to go out and account for the offensive line struggles. You saw what happens with the kind of threats that the Chiefs have with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill on the field at the same time. Obviously, I think Mahomes is going to thrive in any situation. I'd rather have the one he's in now than the one that he could have with the Green Bay Packers.
This has been a fun little debate on Twitter, yesterday at the time you guys are listening to this, because it seems like there are some grades out there that have the Chiefs offensive line as top 10 in the NFL in any metric besides bad, but they say the Chiefs have a top 10 offensive line in terms of pass protection and run blocking. And I feel like they must, whoever's grading them at that rate must be watching curling or something, because it's certainly not the Chiefs offensive line play football. So I do think this is closer. Like, I do think the Chiefs clearly have better weapons, but the Green Bay Packers have the best pass protecting offensive line in the NFL, a very good run blocking offensive line this year, especially when they're mostly healthy. I do think that does close the gap here. If my quarterback's Patrick Mahomes, give me the weapons, because he clearly makes it work with this offensive line. He can play out of structure with the best of them. He has some of the weirdest arm angles to get by through some of this pressure. He can fade away and make all these throws. Not that Aaron Rodgers can't do that. I just don't trust him at this point of his career to do it as consistently. If I have Aaron Rodgers, give me the better offensive line with good but not as good weapons. Give him the time to sit back there. I don't know if Pat would be as patient as Rodgers is, so I might even take Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay's situation over Mahomes right this moment. But if it's just the quarterback dependent, give me more weapons with Patrick Mahomes every single time.
Yep, sweep it. Weapons for Mahomes. I think we've seen what he can do when, you know, with an offensive line that, frankly, is not nearly as good as Green Bay's elite offensive line. Don't let anybody try and tell you any differently. They are incredible. They have been great. Yes, there has been some injuries, but man, they are so, so, so good at offensive line. So I just think that Mahomes and those weapons, he can buy enough time at this point in his career to really do some damage with the weapons.
Ben White 485 asks, if you had to pick one, which position group needs to step up the most in order for the Chiefs to repeat as Super Bowl champions?
I think that this isn't even close for me, and it's defensive end. And I realize that the Chiefs offense is going to be probably the reason that they go back and they win themselves another Super Bowl. But let's say that offense is not clicking for whatever reason for a given quarter or two. We've seen some periods where there's been a lull. They're probably going to be out to a lead, and they're probably going to need to rush the passer. Well, right now, Chris Jones is the only guy that from a week-to-week basis, and I realize Maddie's talking about his consistency. The consistency is in-game. From a week-to-week basis, he's got enough pass rushes to make it count. The rest of those guys don't. Like, they've got a lot invested in their defensive end position. Frank Clark, they got a lot of money in. Tano Pasigno is a second-round pick. We've got Alex Okafor that's got a decent-sized free agent contract. Mike Dana's a guy right now that's really the fifth-round draft pick that we're just not really expecting a ton out of. But that group steps up and starts rushing the passer better, playing better against the run as well, that defensive end opposite of Clark. That transforms this defense. That allows Steve Spagnuolo to not have to blitz for damn near half the game against Tampa Bay to get pressure and force Tom Brady off of his spot. It allows you to do a lot more. It allows you to get a lot more exotic with your coverage. It comes up with more stops, gets you more negative plays, which then just helps the offense if they have a slightly off game to give them a little bit more cushion.
I think the pass rush is a good pick. I don't have as much faith that Chris Jones and Frank Clark are getting enough pressure. I mean, Chris Jones or Frank Clark are getting enough pressure right now. But like Craig kind of said, I think you can mask that a little bit with blitzing. So I'm going to say the safety group, for the simple fact that you can cover a bad pass rush if you're Steve Spagnuolo by blitzing. You can be exotic. You can bring pressure from different area and throw fun coverages behind it to lead to big plays. You can't do that if your safety play continues to be as bad as it has been this year. That safety room needs to come out and play as hard as they come out and tweet, because if that was the case, they would be going fantastic right now. But they need to step their game up. If the Chiefs safety group can cover the pass rush if they need to. You obviously don't want that to be the case, but they can cover that because Steve Spagnuolo is a good, creative defensive coordinator. If this safety room keeps playing like they are right now, I don't know if there's anything you can do. Sands getting pressure in under 2.5 seconds every single play, which just isn't realistic, even if Frank Clark and Chris Jones return to their peak performance from earlier this year. That's just not going to happen every single play. Someone has to step up on that back end through the middle of the field, or I do think they're going to continue to get gashed like they have versus the Raiders and the Bucks.
Let's go with interior offensive line. Let's just add a third different group. I think the only thing that has remotely slowed this group down really has been that interior group. There's been some quick pressures that have forced some things and, you know, maybe forced Mahomes to get the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker, put him in a bind and incapable of maybe creating in situations at times. If that interior offensive line shores up a little bit more, this group will not, like, they're going to score every time. Like, it's just absurd, you know, like the points that could be added to this from an efficiency standpoint if the interior offensive line plays at a higher level. And running the football, too. You know, honestly, like, I'm sitting here just thinking about passing because that's just how I am, I guess. But honestly, like, if this group could run the football a little bit better, too, the efficiency of this team would be ridiculous. So let's go interior offensive line. Chief Boy RDG asks, using our current roster makeup, if you only had these two choices over the next 4 years, would you rather draft offensive line in the first round every year or wide receiver?
I mean, for me, this one's an easy one. I'm drafting offensive line every single year. I know that the easy answer is that because there's five spots on the offensive line. For the next 4 years, if you spend first round picks, you're going to play all of them potentially. Now, the argument can be made that, you know, Andy rotates his receivers. It allows you to get out of, you know, an expensive wide receiver deal going forward. It gives you some insurance in case Tyreek Hill gets hurt or Travis Kelce gets hurt, God forbid, either one of those guys. But honestly, you can protect Patrick Mahomes with four first-round offensive linemen, especially if you get to slot in Lucas Niang at right tackle next year in place of Mitchell Schwartz. Then all of a sudden, the end of the first round is a prime position to catch some of these interior offensive linemen that fall. Like, guys that we typically love in the draft, they don't go in the top 15 unless you're Quentin Nelson. So you can catch a guy that's a really good center or really good guard at, like, the, you know, the 30, 32, 35 range there. All of a sudden, you can have a stud interior offensive line. You can draft yourself a project tackle at the end and try and develop them behind Eric Fisher. All of a sudden, you've got an excellent offensive line that allows you to get by with a little less awesome weapons. But we know that Brett Veach would just turn around and draft those wide receivers in the second round anyway, so he's going to stock the cabinet for Mahomes. Then that offense is just freaking unstoppable.
Kit, do you have a rationale for why you would take receiver here?
No, because I've got a really good little nugget here coming.
Okay, so I will give the argument for receiver. Over 4 years, that is a lot of investment in offensive line. I don't think you need four first round picks on offensive line to make up your team. I think the Dallas Cowboys went that general role, and it you leave talent lacking at other parts of your roster. If you cut this down to 2 years, I'm all about the offensive line. But I don't need four first round picks on offensive linemen. That means at best two of them are interior guys. That's just a lot of investment at a position group that can be pieced together with non first round talented guys. Now, what am I going to do with four first round wide receivers? I don't know. Maybe we will just run empty every single play. That sounds kind of fun.
You're going to run 10 personnel? All game long?
I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with all four of them. I'm really not in that regard, but you can start cycling through them. You know, you don't have to keep anybody that's currently on the roster. It's just, I could buy more easily the value for receivers in the first round, despite there being a lot of good wide receivers on day two in the draft. The value of taking a wide receiver in round one 4 years in a row is going to pan out better than taking four first round offensive linemen.
All right, here's my argument for taking offensive linemen. A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Terry McLaurin, Michael Pittman Jr., Chase Claypool.
You skipped somebody from that first draft class.
All of these guys are second-round wide receivers, and all of them are well on their way to being outstanding receivers in this league. I think there's good value in the second round. At wide receiver. Not to say that there isn't an offensive line, but I do think it becomes a little bit more of a challenge after the first round. So I would go ahead and prioritize trying to, you know, grab wide receivers later in the draft in day two. But I'd focus on that offensive line. And there's I think the bust rate on offensive line in the first round is not nearly as high. Graver Tanner. How has Nick Allegretti played this season? I've seen vastly different takes on Twitter about his play.
Acceptable. I think that Allegretti as a run blocker has been close to average in terms of a starter for the NFL. He's been an average NFL run blocker. The problem is the Chiefs around him aren't great run blocking. How important is it just being an average run blocker? He's not great at just average. He misses some blocks. He has good power. He gets out into space, but I think he is still, like Wiley, has some balance issues. He looks like he has a hard time coming under control, trying to get to the second level to connect on some blocks. I mean, as a run blocker, I think he's been average in pass protection. Not good. Again, he struggles to move laterally. Guys that are good interior pass rushers, that are especially guys that are quick, really make him work. He gets a lot of help from Austin Ryder at center, and that takes help away from Andrew Wiley, which isn't great, and he still gets beat fairly often. I do think he's a smart player. I think he's getting a little bit better, and if you go into next season with Allegretti as a starter, and he's clearly, you know, the fifth guy, the guy that would be rotated out first, you're fine. The issue is right now he's like tied for the second best offensive lineman that they are fielding on any given play. And that's where the issue comes in, because he doesn't do enough to stand out, and he gets a lot of help when everybody else around him, besides maybe Eric Fisher, needs that same amount of help. So at the end of the day, I think he's below average as a starter, but he hasn't been terrible. Like, he's definitely worth a guy that I'm fine with getting reps. I just think they have to look for improvement on him or the guys around him, because you can't have this many guys at that level.
Chief Lutz 11 asks, defensive line or offensive line, what will get fixed first and what needs to get fixed first? What needs to get fixed first is the defensive line. A lot of things get better if the defensive line starts making some improvements and starts generating some pressure here, because I think you can mask some of the other issues of this football team if you're able to get more consistent pressure. What I think will get fixed first, I was thinking about this, like, there's a lot of potential solutions to improve the interior offensive line, kind of like you saw Steven Wisniewski came in late. You've got him, Martinez Rankin waiting in the wings. Like, there are some potential that this group can get turned around and improved a little bit, relatively quickly. And Mitchell Schwartz coming back. Like, there is help on the way, potentially, if the Chiefs – I mean, I don't think it can get any worse with Andrew Wiley. So I think you can make an improvement there. Mitchell Schwartz, if he gets in the mix – he's one of the best right tackles in football. James K. asks, Legarius Sneed over Ward or Bashaud Breeland?
Can I choose Rashad Fenton instead of these guys? I mean, Maddie and I talked about this a little bit this week. Legarius Sneed is playing in the slot, and he's playing there in the nickel. Now, again, like I talked about earlier in the podcast, the Chiefs aren't really in their base defense very much right now, because most teams aren't forcing them into their base defense, because most teams don't run heavy personnel that often anymore. So more regularly, the Chiefs are in a sub-package. Legarius Sneed is in the slot in those packages, except when it gets to third and long or second and super long. That's when they go to the dime that I think everybody's used to seeing with Ben Neiman on the field. That brings Rashad Fenton on the field as well. Fenton knows the playbook a little bit more. They do a little more exotic stuff, dropping him deep. He's just been in the system another year, and he understands what Spagnuolo wants to do there, but he is a little bit of a limited athlete. He's not a guy that has a very fluid hip turn. He's not especially fast in a straight line. He's a very smart player. He's a very good tackler, and he can locate the ball pretty well, but he just doesn't have the same athletic profile that Legarius Sneed has. So if I can put Legarius Sneed in that role, doing a lot of those same things, there's the Chris Godwin explosive play. Rashad Fenton is dropping to a post safety role, and he just can't get his hips around and can't close to the catch point quickly enough. I think a guy like Legarius Sneed, asked to do those same things, comes up with an interception in that play. So I think that he can play with Ward and Breeland and be just as effective as he is on those early downs if he can replace Rashad Fenton.
Jackie Jared, 428. Do you expect Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be used in different roles or more often in the future? Is his pass blocking the issue, and what's currently holding him back? The pass blocking is not there. He's not really to be trusted right now in that area of the game. I think there is untapped potential for him in the passing game. Me and Maddie have been talking about it a little bit. Maddie thinks he might even have more than the three drops he's registered, which could definitely be the case. But I think there's just so much untapped potential in the passing game. And if he gets involved the way that he's very obviously capable of getting involved, which we've seen at LSU, one of the reasons I got so excited about him and one of the reasons I felt relatively okay about taking a running back in the first round was because I thought the upside and the ceiling of him as a pass catcher, as a dynamic piece underneath, as a route runner, as a receiver, would offset maybe some of the RB value conversation, but it hasn't to this point. Let's give it some time. There's still a lot of time left in this season. Maybe they're going to unleash some more of that here later in the year. All right. Our Sharp Diesel 3. Why on earth do we allow Dan Sorensen to cover these amazing running backs and tight ends?
Well, I mean, because frankly, the other options are worse. I mean, it's a situation where you've only got a limited number of people that can cover. You're not going to take a corner off of a good wide receiver to match him up against a running back or a tight end. And frankly, that leaves guys like Tyrann Mathieu, who's smaller than most of the tight ends and struggles to, you know, cover physically down the field with a lot of those guys. And then you've got your linebackers. You got your Ben Neimans. You've got your Anthony Hitchens. You got your Damian Wilsons. Those are the guys that are on the field with Dan Sorensen most often. And of those guys, Dan Sorensen is still by far the best choice to match up and man up with guys like that. Now, is it ideal? No. They could definitely improve on that spot. Dan Sorensen is a limited athlete. Dan Sorensen is a limited player in the NFL. But compared to the rest of the guys that they put on the field to cover alongside him, he's the best option from a size and ability standpoint. He has made more plays against those types of players than any of those other guys combined.
So I just want to add in real quick, if I got to choose where L'Jarius Sneed, whose role he was taking, I mean, one, it would be Charvarius Ward's, but two, kick Warden to play a tight end. He's big enough. Like, I mean, yes. Like that, if perfect. You were going to man up on a tight end or even a running back, I don't know if I love Ward against every running back, but he's a good coverage player comparatively to Daniel Sorensen. Put Charvarius Ward on tight ends, put him on running backs, and let L'Jarius Sneed play on the outside. There's your like quick fix if you're just going man coverage. Now it's very specific. That's the only
and you're
issue.
You're kicking Tyrann Mathieu back down into the slot to help with that, I assume. Yes, that's fine. If that's the option, that's fine. Tyrann Mathieu's not been particularly great against the slot this year, but he's significantly better than asking Dan Sorensen to man up against Cameron Brate or Rob Gronkowski.
Lafeve Bryan asks, are we doing Willie Gay a favor by letting him learn slowly with this red shirt his rookie year versus a guy like Patrick Queen, who is playing every snap and despite what stat watchers are saying, hurting his defense more than any other player on that defense? It's a good observation.
I don't think at linebacker there's such a thing as kind of like ruining your career by getting playing time too early. Like, it's not like quarterback or running back where you're going to start getting scared away from bad reads or from bad plays. You're just learning on the fly. I think the bigger issue is Patrick Queen was at one, a really good defensive coach school under one of the best defensive coordinators. Yeah, he did not play until his final year, but he was constantly around the team. Then he got some starting experiences second to last year. He started all of the final year. He had Dave Aranda there at LSU telling him what he had to do. So I think you're putting him a lot higher up the ready for the NFL category than Willie Gay, who had like bare minimum experience in college for a guy to enter the NFL draft because of some off-field issues, some suspensions, general lack of playing time. You throw those guys into a non-off season where, I mean, you just heard the Broncos quarterback wide receiver that came up. He hadn't met half of the coaches or half of the team. Now, granted, he was on the practice squad and stuff like that, but he hadn't met guys. And that doesn't seem to be too uncommon this year. Willie Gay's on the team. He's been at camp. I'm sure he's met everyone. Just that tells you how little access they have right now. He doesn't get to just walk and live in every film room all the time. It takes time. So I think it's good for the team and for Willie Gay, but I don't think you can ruin a linebacker by throwing him to the Wolves like the Ravens have done.
All right, that's going to do it for the AP Laboratory Mailbag Edition. Thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to check what's going on the AP podcast channel. All the stuff going on all the time. We got a lot of great content out here. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you later.